Hello everybody and welcome back inside the Shark Tank, your favourite Sail Sharks podcast. You know what, probably the only Sail Sharks podcast knocking about now that we think about it. But what a day it is. You know, we're recording this Monday night. You know, everyone's been abuzz all day with the Manu Tuilagi news. Plenty of stuff we'll be plugging for that later on. But also, we've got a win to discuss. We're coming to you off the back of Sale's 25-22 victory over Gloucester. Lots to get into. My name is Lewis, and I'm joined this week just by my co-host, Alex. Alex, how are you?
I'm very good, thank you, mate. Better than I ever thought I was going to be doing this podcast at about 30 minutes into the game on Saturday. But yeah, pleasantly surprised by a very impressive Sale performance, I think, overall. How are you?
Yeah, I mean, very encouraged. When I mean, look, we're going to talk about it plenty today, but that when you have your starting fly half get sent off after 23 minutes, you think it's going to be a pretty tough afternoon, tough weekend, tough podcast the following couple of days, but it wasn't that at all. And obviously, off the back of such an impressive win, really, when you think about it, there's a lot to feel good about as a Sale fan at the moment. So let's kick off there then, Alex. I mean, you know, Sale win at the weekend, 25-22. They beat Gloucester, who are second bottom. The big news is obviously Sale do it with only 14 men. Rob Dupree gets sent off for a tip tackle on Valrapava Ruskin on 23 minutes. Despite that, Gloucester never actually take the lead in the game, and Sale ultimately win it with an AJ McGinty penalty with 9 minutes to go. So I guess, you know, my question is kind of what was your initial reaction to that win on Saturday? What do you think it means for Sale?
Well, I think it's a massive kind of indictment of how mentally resilient we've become. And I think we've seen that under Sanderson quite a lot, is that, you know, when the odds are stacked against us, we somehow, you know, that's two games in a row where we've had players off the pitch for basically over a half, obviously the other one being the Wasps game with the four yellows, you know, and somehow managed to win the game, you know, win a tight game as well that maybe in the past we would have lost. So I think it says a lot about the character of the team. I think, you know, a lot of it is about how poor Gloucester were, and you know, you could say that we've been fortunate in that the two games where we've been down to 13 men, we've been against a poor Wasps team, a poor Gloucester team. But, you know, let's not shy away from the fact that we made them look poor in quite a lot of situations. You know, the way we defended, and particularly the way we attacked, I thought was really encouraging, you know, from where we were a few weeks ago. So I think, yeah, it sort of tells us a lot about where we are. I think there's still clearly a lot of issues in this squad that better teams would have punished. But, you know, as we say, you can only beat what's put in front of you in the day. And to do that against 14 men, against something of a resurgent Gloucester team, I think it's fair to say, you know, from where they were at the start of the season, and against a team with probably at least two British and Irish Lions in there, and maybe, you know, a couple more, is you cannot for one second be anything other than delighted with that, because as soon as that red card went in, I thought, that's it, game gone. So to come out with a win and to have let them back into the game and been level is just, you know, proper resilience. And I think you never really noticed we were down to 14, which is probably the biggest compliment you can pay to the players who were left on the field and the players who came on.
I think it's a testament, really, to where both of these teams are at the moment. You know, Gloucester coming into the game second from bottom, four wins out of 15 on the season coming into Saturday's game. Sale, obviously, third, pushing for a playoff spot. And I think what Saturday kind of showed was Gloucester are obviously in a transitional phase, rookie head coach, some good players, but maybe, you know, the sort of team around them isn't necessarily there. And Sale are just so much further developed in terms of not just individual talent, but also team cohesion, strategy, game plan. You know, we've bemoaned the lack of attacking fluidity this year. That was there a little bit more there was at least some structures to play into, even if they haven't historically been brilliant. And you saw that when we went down to 14 men. It was like, okay, well, we know what we have to do to win this game. And all 14 men on the pitch kind of dug into, okay, this is the system that we play. This is how we defend. This is how we attack. This is how we counterattack. And there wasn't any of that from Gloucester, because if I'm a Gloucester fan or a Gloucester player or whatever, you are wondering how you play against another team for 55 minutes with a man advantage and never take the lead. The fact that Sale not only ever really looked troubled when Willie Hines went over to tie the game up at 22 apiece, and that was on near enough 70 minutes. It took them so long to get into the game that their execution was poor. They didn't manage the game at all, and that is a testament to how well Sale disrupted them. And probably indicative of the fact that Sale are playing with a fair bit of confidence now. They look like a good team. And Gloucester, they were shit.
Yeah, I think, you know, it is, as a Gloucester fan, you've got to kind of be worried about where they are. I suppose it's not dissimilar to when we played Exeter and they went down to 14. And actually, it was a very close game there on in. But, you know, on the other side of that, we did end up winning that game. I mean, we probably should have lost it, but, you know, that's the key, isn't it? And I think that's the difference, in that Gloucester actually, when they eventually got back into the game, looked really good and looked like they'd worked out how to use their pace against us. And if the ball bounces a different way for Louis Rees-Sammet once or twice, then maybe, you know, it's a different result. But at the end of the day, I think the mental fortitude we showed in being calm, being composed, dealing with being down to 14 men, you know, there were times when Gloucester had 5-on-1 overlaps, and because of our defensive structure, we kind of rushed out and shut those down straight away. And I think we just panicked to them and got into their heads. And you know, you saw that with, you know, like Aaron Reid flying out the line early in the game, even to force a knock on, and we were pushing them back inside. And when you've got Johnny May and Louis Rees-Sammet on the wings, you really should be getting round us, you know, one in two or three times, because it's not like we've got Byron McGuigan on the wing going for the intercept. It's very, you know, we had Aaron Reid, Marlon Yard, and then effectively Sam James defending as a winger for most of the game. So, yeah, I think Gloucester will be really frustrated with where they are. So we shouldn't, you know, we shouldn't say that this is entirely down to Sale's utter sort of dominance and fortitude, but you still have to show a lot of it, I think, don't you, to get where they were. And that's going to come out in the three-word reviews as well, which everyone's sent in. So massive thanks to all of our Twitter followers for sending these in. I'll just pick out a few and then we can kind of go into the themes from that. But Van Cannonball, smells like team spirit, hyphenating team spirit there. We've allowed it, but you're on your first warning.
I don't understand, like, three-word reviews and the amount of like
four-word reviews
people do try and get around them is unreal. But yeah,
all yeah, right. But we like it. All right, I'll stick to the traditionals. Michael Graham, better with 14, which is a very good question to ask. Nicholas Waite, substitutions spot on, which I would definitely agree with. Charles Edwards, less cards, please, which I think every Sale fan will agree with. Max Boyle, miraculous energy levels. And Zach, Tom is superhuman. So I guess I think we've sort of talked about where we are in terms of better with 14 and that kind of thing. But maybe if we talk about kind of the energy levels we showed, and I kind of mentioned it before, Lewis, but felt like, you know, We didn't really notice when we went down to 14. Do you think we were better from that point on? Do you think it was the subs who came on who kind of kept that momentum going? Where do you think the key was in once we went down to 14, how we responded to that?
Well, I think the game management aspect of it, both on the field and off the field, was a massive part of it. And that's quite a broad thing to say, so I'll be a bit more specific. But I think on the field, the first sort of 20 minutes was a very fast and loose game. You know, it's Saturday lunchtime. plays it all out the Weetabix. You know, there's a lot of running rugby that was going on, and actually that didn't suit Sale. You know, we struggle with pace in the back line. You saw it early on. There's a couple of sort of hacks forward where Rhys Samit just burns whoever it was he was running against, sometimes Yard, sometimes Reed, and he was very unlucky actually not to have had a brace of tries early in that first half. So it's a bit of a weird game actually, in that it was seven apiece sort of midway through the first half, and we were actually quite fortunate because that sort of game lends itself much better to the team that has Louis Rhys-Samit, Johnny May, etc. in their squad. But what actually happened after the red card is that Sale kind of calmed down a little bit, because you can't play fast running rugby when you've only got 14 men on the pitch. It's just not possible, you know. And a massive that kind of like culture shift that seemed to happen in the squad settled things down and actually allowed our natural advantages, which was up front, in the back row especially, and in the halfbacks, to really kind of come to the fore, bringing McGinty on straight away, and not kind of messing around with Sam James moving to 10 and keeping a back three on. I thought it was a brilliant move. It's a big call because you're taking a winger off in Aaron Reed. That leaves a lot of space in the backs in the backfield for Rhys Samit and Johnny May to run into. Huge call, but actually bringing McGinty on, he settled the game down really, really well. You know, he kicked well out of hand. He managed the forwards. He marshalled the game very well. He marshalled the clerk well as well. So that was a massive part of it, at least in kind of settling down in that first half. And in the second half, I thought the use of substitutions was brilliant, because in a game like Saturday's, nice weather, firm track, you know, some of those big lads up front, they were blowing, right? And you know, there was plenty of passages of play where the ball was in play for 2-3 minutes at a time. And there was a real worry here. It's like, Sanderson has to get this spot on, because if he brings James Harper on too early, by 75 minutes, when in theory Gloucester might be chasing the game, we're going to really struggle to put numbers into the wide channels and make tackles and get back up off the floor. And looking at that kind of succession of substitutions, Cam Neild comes on at 53 minutes for Jean-Luc Dupria. Great move. Proper engine player. Puts more pressure on the breakdown. Will Cliff comes on at 60 minutes. Just again, help kind of keep marshalling that game. Kurtis Langdon on at 60 minutes. And then Morozov and Harper on at 65 for that kind of last 15 minutes. I thought the way that was kind of staggered was really, really good. It showed an understanding of the capabilities of the players in the squad. And I think as well, it kind of shows where Alex Sanderson is maybe a better coach than George Skivington at the respective parts of the career. No slight on Skivington, but even in that second half, there wasn't really a game plan for Gloucester. They weren't sort of taking it to Sale and saying, we'll have the ball, we'll have possession, or, you know, and we'll make you run around and chase after us. They kind of played into our hands. We said, right, we're just going to set out our stall, we'll slow everything down, we'll play territory if we need to. And Gloucester just didn't come up with an alternative. They let us dictate the game to them. And that came through in the substitutions, because we're like, okay, right, Our lads in the front row are tired now. We're going to swap them out and we're going to apply pressure on this scrum to stop you getting any ball and actually doing anything with it. And again, it goes back to the fact that Gloucester, you know, they're only scoring their second and third tries on 60 and 65 minutes. So late in the game where actually, you know, coming out of the halftime break, that was the perfect time to put your stamp on the game. And they just didn't do that. So I think We saw kind of two things there, which is, you know, again, Sale's team structure has been so much better than Gloucester's, and it's probably a byproduct of the confidence this team is playing with, and also very astute management of the game by the players on the field and the coaches off the field. And you know, what was the kind of key thing that you pulled out from that second half performance, Alex?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. It was the way we managed territory and managed the game, because I think what's really, really changed in this Sale squad is that, you know, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, and especially last season, actually, if we tried to manage territory, we would invariably make a mistake, which would lead to us losing said territory. And what we've got now, and I think it's been really kind of undervalued, is the massive improvement in our line out, and particularly in Acker van der Merwe's throwing. Because once you've got him throwing in well, we're winning line out balls. So I think we only lost, we'll come on to it in the stats later, but we only lost one line out in the game, which is one that Jean-Luc Dupree dropped, really. It's nothing to do with Acker's throw. There was no competition on him. He just dropped it. So, you know, to have that kind of solidity and then to have a rolling maul that just is making metres every time. And if the rolling maul doesn't make metres, Rowan Jensen van Rensburg makes metres in the 12 channel against an inexperienced 10 in George Barton, and then Billy Tweltrees, who's not the world's best defender. You know, I think it's the first time I've really seen us execute our strongest game plan very, very well. And I suppose it was almost similar to the Scarlets game, in that you just felt like we were in control and we were playing the game that we wanted to play. And every time they tried to play their game, we forced them back inside. And actually, if we'd had 15 men on the pitch, I think we'd have... This is a, you know, very dangerous thing to say, but I think if we'd kept 15 men on the pitch, we'd have absolutely blown them away. Because I think we would have built a score, built a lead, and then, you know, just kept on moving away from them further and further. But we just completely dominated them in every key area of the game, you know. And I think that was partly to do with the quality of what we did in terms of Acker throwing in and the line out and the organisation of them all, but also to do with individual players, particularly Faf and AJ, I think really, really ran the show while they were on the field. And you know, that's talking about the 14 men. I think we'll come on to Rob Dupree later, but I actually thought he looked very good when he was on. But the way AJ sort of commands the game and the way Faf does as well from nine, it can just wear teams down and it forces mistakes and it ends up with us playing, you know. I mean, we played pretty much the last 10 minutes of the game in their half.
I think there's one thing there that I really wanted to pick out, which is this idea that we were constantly forcing them inside. And you picked out McGinty and De Klerk there as kind of key players. And we said this in the preview last week, but that was an area where we had a clear advantage over Gloucester. Because I think the way we were defending is the way that we defend all the time. And it was a super aggressive version of it because we're down to 14 men. But if you've got a more experienced or indeed a better 9 and 10 combination, you know what's coming and you know the ways around it. The fact that Gloucester were not kicking into Sale's backfield when they only had two back three players in there. The fact that they weren't throwing the balls over the top until right at the end of the game, where in theory they'd left themselves a little bit too much to do, I think is a testament to how poor, you know, Barton, Tweltrees, Chapman, and Hines were on the day, because they really struggled to come up with a counterpunch against what Sale were doing. And actually, a better team says, right, well, we know so-and-so is going to blitz in that 13-14 channel because they have to prevent a try. We'll just hold on to the ball for a little bit longer and float the pass over. They did that twice and they scored twice. But why were they only doing it at 65 minutes in? I think that's a real area that Gloucester were poor, and by virtue, you know, Sale were quite strong.
And I think your point there about a better team would kind of make us pay is absolutely right, because last week at La Rochelle, a better team did make us pay, didn't they? And that's the key difference, is that, you know, you are right. We had two of our back three in the game, and yet the tactic that La Rochelle employed against us that worked a treat, which is kicking, cross-kicking to a fast winger on the other side of the field, holding the width, I don't think they tried it once, which, you know, is odd. And I think we kind of got away with that. And you are right that, you know, obviously we put that pressure on, and it's things like Rohan bursting out the line and making a tackle rather than missing it is a bit of a differentiator. But, you know, there's still a massive flaw in our game that a decent coach, I think, they should have exploited it. And the fact that they didn't is sort of like, ooh, I hope no Worcester directs of rugby listen to this podcast. That's all I'm saying.
Well, when they did kick through, and when Johnny May scored his try in the first half, and when Louis Rees-Samit nearly scored his, it was Ed Slater and Rune Ackerman who were doing the kicks. You know, not the 9 and 10. It's just insane. And you just think, like, a much better team would have put us to the sword. And I think, you know, ultimately, there is no shame in saying that this isn't a game that Sale won. It's a game that Gloucester lost, and it's important to characterise it like that. And that's fine, because when any team that gets a red card, their win percentage just plummets. Or sorry, the win probability plummets, and their win percentage as well. So, you know, to be a man down for 55 minutes, over 55 minutes, and a win is a testament to how poor Gloucester were on the day. That being said, you know, there's still lots of positives to shout about from a sale point of view. And I guess, you know, let's chat about some players, Alex. Anyone catch the eye in particular?
Oh, there were some heroic performances, weren't there? I mean, it was mentioned in the three-word reviews, but Tom Curry is an absolute level above. And actually, I think, you know, we talk about Gloucester throwing that away. Tom Curry virtually won us that game with a turnover on our 22 on, like, 72 minutes. That obviously ends up with them scoring a try that is then disallowed. But that turnover takes us down the field, and then we camp in there 22 for the remainder of the game. So I think he was just all game. He looked like a real leader, and obviously he was captain at the end of the game once Faf had gone off. And I think it's a fair thing to make him captain in that squad, because, you know, I mean, I do think Ben has probably got more experience in being captain Sale, and I think it makes sense to have Faf as the starting captain. But, you know, he is a real, real leader in that squad now, and he's bringing his England performances back to Sale. In an incredible way. So yeah, definitely Tom Curry. I mean, the whole pack, you could pick out anyone, but I'll go for Ross Harrison, who I thought had a really quietly strong game, you know, getting around the field, doing that sort of first receiver, you know, and then tipping it on that he does. And in the scrum, I thought he just demolished their side. I think, you know, we had one penalty go against us, which was, I'm not 100% sure about, but we were completely on top all game. You know, to be honest, I could pick out loads of people, but I don't want to take them all, so I'll leave them to you, and then we can come back if there's anyone I think has criminally been missed out. But I think, yeah, up front, we just battered them, and it was a massive performance from a lot of people.
Yeah, and I think that's embodied by Kovac Visa and JP Dupree, both played a full 80. These players aren't Lou Diaga or Mauro Itoje or anyone of that ilk. You know, they are just kind of workhorses who kind of just get on with stuff. Visa in particular, you know, I think there's a little bit more dynamicism to his game to unlock, given that he's played a bit of flanker as well at the Stormers. So you know, I think the way we're using him is not the only way he could be used. But, you know, 80-minute performances from both of them. And again, you know, talking about game management, I mean, James Phillips is a very, very battle-tested player. But again, there's questions. Is he going to be the sort of player who's going to thrive in a very open game? Probably not. He doesn't have a lot of natural pace to him. So interesting that, you know, ultimately he didn't make an appearance off the bench, and Sanderson kept Visa and Dupree on there. Aaron Reid, you know, fair play to him. Fantastic try. And a try-saving tackle when Gloucester had that, I think it was a 3-on-1 that you mentioned before, Alex, you know, jumping out of the line, putting pressure on the ball player to force into a mistake. So, you know, there's a 14-point swing there alone. What I liked about Reid was, for his try, it's not just about showing a bit of gas to burst through the hole, it's about shrugging off one tackle, shrugging off a second tackle, and then having the wherewithal to make that second movement to score the try as well. We all know Aaron Reid is super fast, but being fast isn't good enough in the modern game. You need to be able to break a tackle. You need to be able to run through people as well, as round them sometimes. That being said, he didn't look great against Johnny Mayo or Louis Rees-Sammet, but not many people do, so fair enough. And then before we go on to Rob Dupree, the two sides of his game, Marlon Yard is in some incredible form at the moment. There are very rightfully questions about how much pace he's lost after that leg injury and whether or not he's ever going to get it back. I don't think he will. You know, maybe he gets back to sort of 60, 65%. But you're seeing a slight change in his game now. It's less about pure speed and kind of getting through the gaps. It's more about picking the right line to get through them because he doesn't have that natural advantage anymore. You see him playing off McGinty or Dupree's shoulder a little bit more, so that a lot in the first half. And obviously for his try as well, it's coming off the wing and just hitting a direct line. You can see that he's maybe changed a little bit of his physique slightly to put a little bit more, just a little bit more weight on his upper body, and that allows him to break tackles a little bit easier than in the past, where it wasn't necessarily a part of his game. So, you know, you look at his try in that second half, it's a case of right picking the right line and being able to get his shoulders free from the tackle and get over the line. So that plus all the defensive work that he's been putting in and the kick chasing as well is, you know, he's in some fantastic form at the moment. And again, you know, testament to the Sale physio and recovery team who've done a fantastic job of bringing him back along and building him up on a week-by-week basis. But I guess the main character in this play from Saturday is Rob Dupree, Alex. And you mentioned before that you were quite keen on him on his first half performance. But obviously there's a lot to get into there. So what, first of all, what impressed you with him in that first 23 minutes?
I think his control of the game and his distribution. I'll preface this with saying I feel really, really sorry for Rob Dupree because I think it keeps happening that he's almost getting, you know, either playing in a Sale team that's not playing well, or then, you know, what happened on the weekend. And, you know, it's a mistake, but it is unfortunate. And I'm not denying it's absolutely a red card, and I just think it's not malicious and you know, it's not like he was doing something stupid. He's trying to dominate the hit. He puts a really good tackle in, and if anything, it's just too good a tackle. And we'll come on to it in a minute anyway. But I think in that first 20 minutes, he showed kind of his control of the game and the way that our attack is a bit better with him playing in kind of the way he distributes the ball and the way he holds defenders. Christian Day rightly pointed out that he plays a lot deeper than AJ McGinty. But what it does do is he gets the ball wide quickly into the hands of Sam James, who can then sort of, you know, operate in those wider channels with a bit more space, which I think AJ has a tendency to kind of keep hold of the ball a bit, look for the right pass and maybe throw a show and go every now and then, which is obviously a very different threat, and it's good to have those two. I thought the way he created Faf's try was incredible. You know, the first of all, he shrugs off a potential British and Irish lion in Chris Harris, who everyone's been talking about how brilliant he is, and he is. But he has been for like 5 years and no one's talked about him. He then kind of shows the pace to get through the gap. He then makes the decision not to pass to Aaron Reid, which I actually think is quite a good decision, because I think Aaron Reid's getting caught there just because of the people who are close to him, as opposed to, you know, I think if he gets the ball in space, he beats everyone for pace. But I think people would tackle him. And then to sort of get on the ground, and the offload is, you know, just sublime. And the support line from Faf is absolutely brilliant. But just to, you know, to execute that offload after getting tackled and kind of having it was the heads up rugby and the kind of, what is the best decision to make? The best decision isn't to pass Aaron Reid. Right, I've been tackled. The best decision to make is to offload it to Faf de Klerk, who's running through. And like to do that in the split second and make those decisions and then execute them accurately, I just thought showed kind of the level his game was at. And I think the big thing holding Rob Dupree back from being our starting 10 at the moment is his kicking, because AJ comes on and kicks 100% and Rob kicks 50%, missing a kick that is eminently gettable. But apart from that, he is playing really, really good rugby at the moment. And then, of course, on 23 minutes, we fail to exit. And he has to tackle a prop, and good Lord, he puts a hit in, but he just sort of, the momentum takes it away from him. And I just think it's so unfortunate that, I think Martin Whiteley pointed it out on Twitter, and Alex Sanderson pointed it out after the game as well, he shouldn't be in that position of having to make that tackle, because we should have exited and been at the other side of the field. And he's put in a great hit. Rapava Ruskin, who is a hell of a man to move, it just shows the strength of Rob Dupree, goes over, hits his head directly into the ground, clear red card under the new framework, and just a massive shame, because I think the way we were playing with Rob Dupree, and it's kind of a wider point about our attack in this game, it just looks so, so good compared to where we were 4 months ago, 3 months ago. So, yeah, a massive shame for Opapri, and I do feel very sorry for him. He'll obviously be banned for, I think it's 3 games, is it now? Which is another question on who comes in as a backup 10. But hopefully he's back for kind of the running and gives us that different dimension, because I'm really a fan of him. What's your thoughts? Are you on the Rob De Carrier fan club, or are you AJ McGinty show and go all the way?
I mean, I'm McGinty show and go all the way, but I'm a big proponent of a 10 who kicks first more than anything. But I think Rob De Carrier is a great squad player to have. I think we probably know enough about him now to say that he's probably not your starting 10 if you're going to be a Premiership contender. I mean, you could kind of say that about AJ McGinty as well. I think the ceiling with McGinty is a little bit higher because of that kicking. You know, RDP has just never really shown that he can kick at sort of 70%, which is probably the bare minimum that you need to be a top six team, never mind a top four team. What I really like about Rob De Carrier, though, is that distribution and that passing. He has probably one of the best first passes of anyone in the Premiership at 10, because he gets both weight and length on the pass. And actually what works really well with Sale is, because our wingers aren't the quickest, what he does is he gives them a pass that they can run onto. And we saw it in the first couple of minutes in the first half against Gloucester, these sort of long, lofty passes that hang in the air for long enough that a Marlon Yard, for example, can really run onto it at full tilt. Now, that full tilt might not be as impressive as Johnny May's, but it turns a half gap into a gap for them to go through. And there's less pressure on the winger to make the meters there, because Rob De Carrier has done so well in holding the line and actually getting the ball over the top. I think that is a particular strength of his game. I think he's a very strong ball carrier, and I think the more we see him playing at 12, the better. Because I think there's in tight games, being able to roll both him and McGinty out as a 10-12 combination, I think is really useful, because I think you need multiple kicking options on the pitch, and if he can play it as a ball carrying inside centre as well, that's great. And I think defensively, he's a very strong as well. Less so in the centres, but you know, he's South African. You know, he's a big lad. He grew up probably wrestling with the De Carrier twins, so you know he's got some meat on his bones, and you know he's not going to be a turnstile. And there's a massive value in that, because if teams can't target you as a 10, that means they have to go inside or outside. Well, outside is Rohan Rianzi van Rensburg, and inside is De Carrier's two brothers, who are also massive. So I think there's definitely a place for him. I think what we're seeing in the last couple of months is his role in this squad, as it's currently constituted, is going to be a squad and a rotational player, a good squad and rotational player. But someone who can rotate when we need something different, because he's certainly got those skills. I just think that place kicking needs to improve. And ultimately, with your team like Sale, who can bully teams up front, and you don't necessarily need to score 4 tries from open play all the time, it's more important to have a kicker who kicks 85% than it is for who can kick 65%, but play a little bit looser. And I think that's going to be, you know, the selection call that's going to kind of dominate the next sort of 18 months for Sale, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the thing. If Rob Prey is on the pitch for the next two, to AJ's two last kicks, does he make them? He might make one of them, but you wouldn't, you know, bet your house on him making both. And that's ultimately the difference, isn't it? AJ converting that Marlon Yard try, which is a great conversion, and then scoring the penalty, which is not the hardest penalty in the world, but it's still it's from a relatively similar position to where Rob De Carrier missed his.
Well, you think about it, actually, this time last year, the very first game of last season, Sale versus Gloucester at home, Rob De Carrier has a kick at the death to win it, and he misses it. And, you know, that is very unfortunate. But, you know, fundamentally, the biggest knock on Danny Cipriani was always, he's brilliant in the loose, but he doesn't necessarily kick his goals. Danny Cipriani was still a 60-65% kicker. Not great, but it's not horrendous. And Rob Dupuy is better than that, but not by much. And ultimately, you put Danny Cipriani behind this team, behind this forward pack, and you put AJ McGinty behind it. I think the ceiling is still high with McGinty, because all you need is your forward pack to roll over teams and kick your penalties and kick your conversions. And we're quite lucky in that we don't necessarily need Rob Dupuy. But I think if we did have Rob Dupuy playing the full season, we'd probably score a few more tries. But overall, we'd probably score less points.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, isn't it? And you know, we're a team that know what it's like to have an unreliable kicker, because for a long time we didn't have AJ McGinty fit, and we kind of had Faf kicking or Will Cliff kicking. And we saw the impact that had. We lost games purely because of that reason. So until we are a good enough team, and I think that's the point, isn't it? Until we're a good enough team to blow teams out of the water like Quinn's currently do or are doing, we can't afford not to have that that metronomic kicker who's returning those higher rates. And I think that's the fundamental point at the moment. But to be fair, you know, AJ was kicking at like 73% last season. So, you know, there's absolutely hope for Rob Dupuy, because I think actually when he came to us on that loan spell, he kicked really, really well. And maybe it's in hindsight, because we're so used to not having a kicker, that we thought, oh, it's great to have someone who lands 70% of them rather than 30% of them. But still, you know, I think he's clearly good enough to do it. It's just fallen away as part of his game recently.
Anything else on this Gloucester game then that you wanted to pull out?
Well, I guess I'll just have a little quick run through the stats. I think we've kind of talked a lot about it, and the stats are a bit mad this week, because it was a bit of a weird game, wasn't it? I think the encouraging things is that we had a majority of possession. We had 56% and we won the game, which I've been banging on about for ages. I mean, to have a majority of possession with 14 men on the pitch for most of it,
that's insane.
Kind of, again, speaks to what we were saying about how Gloucester didn't manage it well. Tackle success rate, interestingly, was quite low. It was 83%. Gloucester's was 85%. I think that's partly because of the kind of the way we were defending and the fact that we were rushing out, and someone like Kovas Visa, who actually had a really, really good game, tackled at 63% but made 10 tackles. So it's kind of, you know, it's a bit of a false one there because of the way we were forced to defend. But some really good performances from JP Dupuy, who made 9 out of 9, Ross Harrison 10 out of 10, and Tom Curry 9 out of 10 tackles. Dan Dupuy 7 out of 7 as well, worth a mention. So, you know, I think defensively we were quite strong. I think discipline was a really, really good area this week. We only conceded 9 penalties. Gloucester conceded 14. And I think a lot of that kind of, that probably speaks to why we were so good, because that improving that discipline, again, nip below double figures is massive for us, because we're so used to going well over double figures and kind of dealing with that. So that's probably another reason we were able to control the game and that we were able to win penalties off Gloucester through the likes of Curry. And also not concede loads. Line out really strong, 16 out of 17. Aka, as I said, lost 1, but other than that, made all the others, and Curtis Langdon came on and threw 5 out of 5. So, you know, I tweeted about this a couple of weeks ago, but it is just such an improvement area. So that's really, really good to see. And then attacking-wise, just to kind of note, the last few games we've made over 3 metres per carry, which, when I was kind of going on about how our attacking performance was really poor, that was a big area of concern. So we made 3.47 metres per carry. And just some incredible performances. AJ McGinty with 48 metres off the bench. Rowan Jansen van Rensburg, 12 carries for 63 metres. Just a huge performance inside centre. And in the back row as well, some massive performances. Jean-Luc, 17 metres off 10 carries. Dan Dupuy, 43 metres off 12 carries. And then Tom Curry, 45 metres off 17 carries. The work rate, the metres, I think, just speaks to what an incredible performance that was from him. And I kind of mentioned, I think he might have been on Patreon, actually, a few weeks ago, maybe in the mid-season, about how Faf wasn't quite lighting up the world with his attack this season. And I think you've seen the last few games a massive difference in that. So this game, he made 29 metres off 6 carries. And I think it just kind of speaks to the way he's starting to get back to that kind of electric form that we used to. And yes, there's a bit of uncertainty and a few mistakes that come from that. which isn't ideal in a game against Gloucester when you're down to 14 men. But actually, it does bring a lot of attacking kind of verve to our game. So that was really valuable. And then, yeah, we talked about AJ's kicking, obviously, 100%, which is really good to see. But I think, yeah, if we're to summarise it, you know, scrums, we conceded one penalty, but other than that, we won seven scrums, so we're at 88%. Lineouts, as I've said, I think, you know, every stat area that you want to win to dominate a game, we won this week. We conceded less penalties. We won our lineouts. We won our scrums. And actually, we did the basics really, really, really well, which then enabled us to stay in the game. And I think that's the key difference. If we do those basics well, and we've said it for years, haven't we? You know, this Sale team is 5% off being a brilliant team. And actually, it's always been those basics. It's never been the five, you know, magic percent, because we've always had the magic in Cipriani, De Klerk. So now that we're doing those simple things well, I think we are a really, really dangerous force to be reckoned with going into the latter parts of the season and going into that Worcester game next week on Saturday at 3 p.m. So, Lewis, you know, what do you think of this Worcester team and how do you see next week going for Sale?
What do I think about this Worcester team? They are bad. They are very, very bad. So no James this week. So we're going to be a little bit less diplomatic when it comes to the opposition preview segment of the show. This Worcester team is really bad. And they are counting their lucky stars that there is no promotion and relegation from the Premiership this season. Because if there was, they would be almost certain favourites to go down. So as we come into to this weekend's game, Worcester have played 16 games. They have lost 13 of those, and they have won just three. And as Alex reliably informed me before the podcast, they've actually only won one of those games in real life. The other two games have come by virtue of coronavirus-related postponements earlier in the season. Their only win this season, round one of this year's competition, when they beat London Irish. Here's some numbers for you. 234 points scored this season, worst in the league. Points against, 426, second worst in the league, only to Bath. Points difference, minus 192, which is also the worst in the league. This team, you know, on paper, comes into the competition, comes into the weekend as the worst team in the league. And like I said, they would be nailed on favourites to be relegated if that was still a thing. Unfortunately, it isn't. So Worcester is a bit of a weird one because they've made some exciting signings for next season. You know, they're investing quite heavily in the squad. Duane van der Merwe in particular is an eye-catching signing. But you look at the team that they have at the moment, and it's no surprise that they're languishing at the bottom of the competition because they have one of the weakest squads. They brought in some interesting young players, Billy Searle. Obviously, they have Ollie Lawrence. He have 7 minutes against, you know, whoever in the Six Nations. Ted Hill is someone who's very highly rated for some reason. There are players here who look on paper, you know, look like future England internationals, but it's just never meshed for them, and that's because the general quality of their squad is pretty weak, and probably the weakest among the teams playing in the Premiership at the moment. I've got to do this just because I think it's a testament to how poor they've been this season. In the last five games, they've lost 50 points to 26 away to Harlequins, 62 points to 14 at home, 40 to Northampton, 47 points to 22 away at Bath, 20 points to 17 away at London Irish, and then 24 points to 23 at home to Bristol. What I think is really important to note here is that this Worcester team is obviously one that has nothing to play for. Relegation's out the window. And as such, you're starting to see much more open games of rugby. You're starting to see much more focus being on just playing, scoring tries, scoring points, gelling the team together rather than they are about eking out, losing bonus points. And that's probably the reason why they're getting tonked by 30 or 40 points every week. But there is no sort of doubt about it that this Worcester team, as we saw early in the season, doesn't necessarily have the quality to close out games. You know, they struggle when games are below a margin of 7 points, losing to Wasps by 4 points, Gloucester by 8 points, Bristol by 1 point, Worcester by Irish by 3 points, etc. So, you know, there's a clear issue there. The point I'm getting at here is that this Worcester team sucks and we're playing them at home. Anything less than a try bonus point win would be a massive disappointment given where Sale are as a team. And that's no disrespect to Worcester. I think, you know, come next season when the league is a little bit different and some of these big name additions come in, I think they could be a very different team and a very exciting team in a lot of ways. But fundamentally, this year, they've got nothing to play for. They have a very weak squad. The squad is going to be very low on confidence as well. And they're going to come up against a bit of a bulldozer in Sale, I think is going to not have much issue with them, to be perfectly honest. I quite like James's head-to-head feature, so I'm going to keep that around for this week whilst he's off. Francois Hougard against Faf de Klerk would be the obvious one. Two South African scrum halves, both Springboks. Interestingly enough, Worcester have always managed to get the kind of the jump on Sale and de Klerk specifically, and Hougard always seems to have a fantastic game against the Sharks. But if you're looking for a key clash, that'd be the one that I'd be picking out. Hougard is the heartbeat of the team. He's by far one of their most talented players, particularly in the back line. And he's a really interesting sort of counterbalance against de Klerk. Very similar players in a lot of ways, and very different in others as well. So that'd be my head-to-head. I would say, however, Alex, and this is where I want you to chip in, there's probably a good chance that Sale don't even bother rolling de Klerk out for this game. And I guess knowing what we know about Worcester and the pretty poor form that they've been in this season, what do you think the Sale squad looks like to play them on Saturday?
It's a difficult one, isn't it? Because I think there's obviously got to be some rest. You know, we've had AJ play 60 minutes this week when we didn't really want him to, after two big European games. Or there's no Rob Dupria now for this game, so that's a big decision. So AJ probably has to start, but then do you bring someone like Kieran Wilkinson onto the bench, or do you go with Sam James as your backup 10? That's the interesting thing. I think it's, you know, this Worcester team are in a massive rut at the moment and have been very poor all season, but they did lose by a point to Bristol at home. They have got a performance in them. And I think, you know, we need to be aware of that when we go there. You know, you look at their team and actually there's a lot of talent in a lot of places. And you rightly pointed out who are probably going to have Ollie Lawrence starting outside centre. You've got Ted Hill, as you said, in the back row. I think where we need to target Worcester is the forwards. And I think if we have a strong forwards pack, we can afford to kind of loosen up in the backs, because, you know, their forwards have as kind of almost been their downfall this season. They've really struggled up front to compete with the power that other teams are starting to bring. So I would be, you know, I don't think it'd be too far wrong to have a similar starting pack to this week. I think Visa and JP Dupree acquitted themselves very well. You talked about them. I thought it was probably JP Dupree's best performance in the Sale shirt, actually. I'd expect to see Tom Curry rested in the back row. He's got to have another rest as an England player, from my understanding, and I think it makes sense for it to be against Worcester. So you'd probably see some change there. I mean, personally, I'd bring in Cam Neill, but I'm fed up with saying, let's start Cam Neill when it never happens, so I've given up on it. But maybe Ben Curry coming back from injury. He's sort of due around now, I think, isn't he? And he was obviously there on the weekend. So potentially to bring him back in. We've obviously still got the likes of Doug Dale, who wasn't even in the 23 last week. I'd love to see Aaron Reid giving a proper go, another go. Will be interesting. You know, they've got Francois Venter at inside centre, who I presume will start, who is a massive, massive South African bulldozer, sort of in the style of Rohan, but maybe without quite as much pace, and maybe with a lower ceiling. But, you know, do we start Rohan in that position, or do you give Conor Doherty a go? It's a bit of a baptism of fire for Conor Doherty to go against that kind of power. But, you know, we saw really good things from him. I thought Will Clough was superb off the bench actually on the weekend and really managed the game well. So it would be a good opportunity to get him back in the setup and keep that rotation. I absolutely agree. I think, you know, Faf has played a lot of rugby and had a lot of pressure on him. Worcester will probably expect, you know, well, they won't know what to expect, but they will have to plan for de Klerk. And if they have to plan for de Klerk, not having him in the squad and giving him a rest, it's the ideal time. You know, we've got a big run in, haven't we? And I think that's the thing we've got to keep the eye on. So I think my team will probably be the same front row as this week and keep that going. Same second row, personally. One change in the back row, hopefully bring in Ben Curry for Tom Curry or Neil. I think you keep the two Dupreeas. For now, I still think they're dominating the game, although if Jean-Luc could not get sent off at six ways this time, that would be ideal. I'm not going to say start Rafi Quirk, which is a massive sort of show of restraint on my half. I'll say start Will Clough and have Rafi Quirk on the bench. AJ to start at 10. And then I'd probably have the same back line other than that. I think potential for Byron McGuigan to come back in if we wanted and maybe give Marlon Yard a bit of a rest. But Yard's in great form. Reed deserves a start. Keep Luke James at fullback. So that would be my team. Any disagreements or big changes there? I think, you know, we can afford, my overall opinion is we can afford to change, but we should rest where we can, but not be cocky and kind of, you know, think whatever team we put out can win this. Because, you know, if Worcester turn up, then we are in trouble because they're due a performance. And if it comes against us, I'll be furious.
Yeah, you know, I must admit, when we were kind of doing the preview, obviously we're playing it up a little bit. On the day, any Premiership team can be the others. And there's plenty of quality in that Worcester squad. We've named a few of those players. You know, all it takes is a good performance on the day. And they could turn us over. I mean, we've seen that the last couple of years. We've really struggled, actually, down at six ways. And I think because of that, if this was a home game, given where both teams are at the moment, I'd be very tempted. Roll out the kids, you know, play Doherty and Roebuck. You know, maybe... You know, maybe you you know, play Luke James at 12. You know, rotate. You know, give James Harper a bigger role off the bench, etc., etc. I think because you're down at six ways, you're away from home. It is still tough to win away in this league, no matter who you're playing and what form that they're in. So I think you have to pay lip service to that. And I think because of that, we'll probably see a rotated team, but something similar to what we saw at Gloucester, because you saw that that was not our first-choice team against Gloucester either. So I think you'll probably see a variation on that. Maybe you see Doherty instead of Rohan. Maybe you see Roebuck instead of Reed, that kind of thing. But I don't think there's going to be massive changes. The interesting thing is obviously what happens at a backup 10. We've got Dupree being suspended, and I think it's a great opportunity to bring someone like Kieran Wilkinson in. The pressure's off. This is going to be a game where even if Worcester come out to play, you know, they're still going to be chucking the ball about because they don't have to worry too much about, you know, the bottom line at the end of the season. You know, it's the sort of environment where you'd like to bring someone like Wilkinson, who's a very talented young player, back in and play with the reins off a little bit. So, you know, that's who I'd be bringing in in the backup 10 spot. I think that's the key one. But yeah, you know, if Ben Curry's fit, it's a great chance to get him some game time. I'd definitely give Cam Neill the start to see what you have there alongside the Dupreeas. Potentially Matt Postlethwaite. I think, again, you know, the drop-off between him and JP Dupree is negligible, and it's not going to matter against this Worcester team. So, you know, he's someone that I'd be looking to rotate in as well. And maybe you want to start for Morozov. I think there are areas where you can take your foot off the gas a little bit against this Worcester team. You can't, you know, just roll out the Jets, obviously. You need your big hitters, your Dupreas, your McGinty's, maybe the Clerks as well, and obviously your Sam James's. But there are certainly areas, like we saw against Gloucester, and like we've seen at different times this season, that you can rotate the academy players in without losing much and without having too much to worry about. And that's the way that I think Axe will approach it, and that's the way he should approach it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you're right in that, you know, what we've got is a very good set of academy players. So this isn't kind of... I think the rotation has to be to rest the players who you want to be playing against Exeter and Bristol in a couple of weeks' time, as opposed to resting players for the sake of it. And I think, you know, where we have those really strong academy products, who have proven themselves against, you know, similar or better opposition in recent weeks, there's absolutely no reason not to bring them in. But yeah, I agree. I think Kieran Wilkinson, having put in some really good performances in the Championship, definitely deserves the chance to play if he's fit and if he's ready to go, because I think it'd be a really, really good time to see him back in the Sale team. And you know, you forget, I think the last time he actually played for Sale was probably before that horrific injury, wasn't it? I don't think he's played for us since. Yeah. So, you know, to have him back would be great, because it's a hell of a long time since he's started or even appeared in the 23 for Sale Sharks, which, yeah, at one time he was leading us to away victories in France like it was no bother. So, away victories against Bordeaux, who are now in the semi-finals of the Champions Cup, is the future.
Exactly. So he could definitely handle a Saturday afternoon down at Six Ways, I'd imagine. Cool. Predictions?
I do think we're going to win, although I'm very conscious that we've kind of just said what a poor run of form and poor state this Worcester team is in. And it's probably going to come back to it. It's the sort of thing that we should clip up, and when we lose by a point, you know, we can sort of play ourselves. But I think we're going to win. I think it'll be tougher than we expect and tougher than a lot of people predict. But I do still think we'll have enough. So I'm going to say Sale 25, Worcester 16. What about you?
Okay. I think we're going to steamroll them, to be honest. I think the foundations of which Sale are built on mean that even if we don't have a good game, we're still going to be brilliant in defence and really kind of kill games off. I think Worcester, you look at the team that they played against Quins, there's just not a lot of like game-breaking talent in that. Like, you know, there's some good players, Matt Kovacic, Graham Kitchener, you know, Nick Schoner. Those are really good players, good Premiership quality players, but they're not game-breakers. Even in that back line, Francois Venter hasn't really kicked on. He was someone I was super high on when Worcester signed him. Ollie Lawrence is a talent, but he's not necessarily kind of showing it week in, week out. There just isn't that kind of quality to break open the game. And I think because of that, we'll keep them to 7 points. And I think we'll be able to just roll over their forward pack time and time again. So I'll go in Sale 32-7. I think nice clean win for Sale.
It is the week to get a bonus point, isn't it? We almost should have had one this week. Someone asked us that on Twitter, actually, which we may as well address now, although the people who are probably listening for that are now gone. Would you have kicked it out, or would you have gone for the bonus point if you were Wilcliffe / Alex Sanderson in that?
I would have kicked it out. Just take the 4 points at the end of the day.
Absolutely, me too. But I thought we should answer it, because I'd have nightmares of Lewis Samet running 100 metres against us, which could well happen, knowing Sale Sharks. Although maybe that is the Sale Sharks of old now, eh?
Maybe. I think maybe we've got past that. But I think that's the podcast for this week. Thank you to Alex for joining me, as always. Thank you to all our listeners for sending us 3-word reviews. We are obviously recording this on Manu Monday. The news broke this morning that Sale have re-signed British and Irish Lion, England international, general global superstar Manu Tuilagi to a 2-year contract extension. That'll take him through to the end of the 22-23 season, and of course the 2023 World Cup as well. So to celebrate, we have a emergency pod discussing the news that went out this morning. And also for our Patreon subscribers, there's about 1,000 words that were uploaded this morning as well on what Manu Tuilagi brings to Sale, what it means for the next couple of seasons, what it might mean for Rohan, Jansi van Rensburgen and Sam Hill's futures at the club as well. So it's a great day. Massive statement of intent from Sale, and there's obviously some Shark Tank content to go with it. So if you're not a Patreon subscriber, do sign up, and we've got some exciting line stuff coming up very soon. So Alex, that's everything from me. Is there anything else you want to shout about before we sign off for another week?
As always, massive thank you to Opta and Ben for providing me with stats. I'm currently collating a little something on why saying that AJ McGinty is a really improved player is absolute nonsense, and he's actually always been this good, but he just hasn't played enough. So look out for that. So yeah, thanks Ben Opta. And a massive shout out to the Sale Sharks women's team, who beat the Exeter Chiefs women's team, who are one of the highest rated women's teams on the circuit at the moment, 17:10 at the Corpac Stadium on Saturday, I think it was, as well. Yeah, 2-2. So yeah, massive shout out to them. Great result. Secured at the end with an intercept try, which it's the sort of game you just wish you could have been down at Hayward Road for, because it would have been a great one to watch. So doing really exciting things. I think the form has picked up a lot in recent weeks, and we are starting to see results now follow. So yeah, well done, and hope for many more days where Sale Sharks men's and women's team both win exciting games, because just looking forward to be able to go and watch.
Yeah, exactly. So thanks everyone for listening. We'll speak to you next week.